Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie, streaming, and pop culture related. I'm your host, Kosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And just a classic two-man episode, my brother.
Classic two-man, baby.
What's up, man? What's up? So what we got on schedule for today, man?
So we're going to do a review of the first half of the Severance Season 2.
All right.
We obviously did the first three episodes already. Yes. Put on some theories. So we'll lightly go over the plot of those and lightly cross those. You can get, obviously, our thoughts on the previous episodes, the Mooney's Mini Bites. Now, this is not an official Mooney's Mini Bites. This is more of a full episode, so we can discuss the whole first half of the season.
Yes, not too many of a bite. This is a big bite we're going to take out of this.
Absolutely. But it is going to be a little more focused on episodes 4 and 5 and kind of the fallout from what we saw the first three episodes. Try to tie it all together and then finish with mostly our thoughts and theories of what's going to happen with the show moving forward.
Cool.
All right. So, hopping right into it. First three episodes, again, we already kind of talked over this, but just a quick overview for those who might have missed it. We saw the fallout of season one's events where they, Innies escaped, managed to get outside with the OTC procedure. Then, first episode was mostly dealing with the Innies, the fallout the Innies experience. Mark's experience with the new replacements, trying to get his old co-workers back, meeting the gang, getting them all back together again, finding out that Milchick was in charge and little kid Miss Huang was now the supervisor. Following that, we saw episode 2 as a kind of a mirror episode to episode 1, where we saw what the Audis did during that same time. We actually had quite a few scenes that lined up to the second between those two episodes, when they transferred between the elevator floors, going down and out.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. You know, great attention to detail by the showrunners. That's also when the theory started to take effect in the internet. Obviously, we found the answer by now, of whether it was Heli or Helena down there.
And again, I'll say this, rewatching 1 through 3 to prepare for this, they did a good job of just making that as ambiguous as they could until when it was going to be revealed.
Definitely had some great signs. Ultimately, the people who focused on the elevator thing, these little details were rewarded. They were rewarded for basically their attention to detail, their snooping, their sleuthing. Honestly, credit to Reddit, credit to the internet.
All thanks to Reddit. Shouts
for
out.
Managing to point out, not just, you know, guessing that this was happening, but pointing out the cinematic elements that showed us the directors and creators wanted us to think something was going on. I will get into some, I feel like, holes with what ended up happening.
Yeah, you told me you're having some, like, even though you enjoyed what you saw, there's still some kind of, like, you know, inconsistencies, you said.
That's the way I saw it, but we'll go into that in a second when we talk about episodes 4 and 5.
Right.
So, and then episode 3 was just kind of a follow-up. We saw the goats for the first time.
Yes, the goats.
We saw Dylan's wife for the first time. The fact that Milicic was bribing him with access to his wife and access to his real family.
Yeah, like she had like a whole life, like she was like security, whatever. Like it was really
another way to kind of keep him on leash and potential drama between her maybe falling in love with Innie versus the
most
Audi.
Definitely, yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
Could be potential fertile ground for some drama.
They definitely sowed some seeds there with that one.
Yeah. Definitely. And so that's where we were. And then obviously the big, big final of episode 3 was Mark getting reintegrated. Awesome scene with, like, the crossover. Yep.
Editing, shooting,
the music, the acting, fantastic stuff.
It really is a great scene in television. I don't know if I put it in my top, but it's definitely like an amazing scene just in terms of just not just how it looks, but just what it means for the character of Mark.
The way it managed to represent the mental break between two minds coming together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was amazing.
Yeah.
Right? The way it managed to show that to the audience, because that's the kind of thing that's easier to write on paper right? Because you can describe the emotions, you can describe what's happening internally. It's a lot harder to get that on film.
Yep.
Right? And they did an amazing job of doing so. Kudos to the team behind this. Ben Stiller, Dan, what's his name? Look it up, Jamie.
Pull it up, Jamie.
Go see Jamie.
No, but no. Seriously, I do enjoy the fact that like they're able to approach these themes in such a manner. So it's Dan Erickson.
Dan Erickson.
Yeah.
There we go.
So yeah, I like how
Dan something.
Yeah, I like how him and Dan Erickson are able to approach these themes in a way that like are both visually stimulating to the viewer, but also still reminds you of like what this show is about and just what this character's journey is like going into episode 3, going into episode 4 now. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so this is the new content on the show. And obviously, these are some of the big and most impactful episodes. Hopefully, everybody's already seen them because we're definitely going full spoilers ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we're telling you right now, full spoilers because stuff happens to Mark.
Yeah. The stuff happens is an understatement. So going into episode 4, we see for the first time the innies on the outside based on Lumen's direction, right? That Lumen's putting them on their outside themselves.
Very cool establishing shot.
Yeah, yeah. We have what's called an Orpo. Mm-hmm. What is it? Outside retreat. We'll close it, look it up for a second. It's a bizarre acronym.
Yeah.
Orpo. Outdoor retreat for teaching.
Let me see here. No.
We'll look it up.
Yeah.
But anyways, the establishing shot is them out in a big ice field.
Yeah, they're out. They're in an outdoor retreat team building occurrence.
Outdoor retreat.
The occurrence part is the kind of
the
weird
occurrence was the one that told you about. Outdoor retreat team building
occurrence
should have been exercise or be.
It makes sense though why they call it an occurrence. If the
occurrence definitely is one of those understatements.
Very aptly named.
One of those corporate understatements that makes one of those euphemisms.
Great acronym.
Yeah, ORPO. So, anyways, we opening shot is, I think it's Irving on the ice.
Yeah, it's like you zooming in, like it's that cool dolly shot they do where you're on the character's face to show you that, okay, we're entering the different Annie from Audi, which is a great
shot.
And
we have the ding, obviously, yeah. The now infamous ding.
Iconic ding, yeah.
We see Mark up on a cliff. It's a beautiful scene. We haven't really – the show has – stunning set design and cinematography week to week, but we haven't quite seen something like this.
Did you think that they were actually out? Because we're doing spoilers. Do you think that they're actually out in an actual cold tundra? Just,
you know, I've actually heard theories about that both ways. There's some weird occurrences, like the TV appearing out of nowhere. The fact that Irving didn't freeze to death.
Yeah, that was the biggest one,
we'll,
actually.
We'll talk about this. Yeah. We'll talk about some of the discussion. There's good theories to be discussed here. Anyways, we have that establishing beautiful scenery, beautiful but also dangerous and scary scenery. Mm-hmm. We're obviously worried about Irving immediately, and we see his stress about having to be out on the ice, having to walk carefully.
Yeah, you feel it.
Mark's up on a cliff. They are in precarious positions. They are not safe. This is not a fun, you know, team building exercise where you're going to the beach or you're going to Benihana's.
They have those cool like Russian outfits, I'd call it, like little like cool hats with the big coats, like all had matching, all suited up, whole team.
Very, very fancy, suiting.
Russian dignitary.
Very fancy costuming from the show. Mm-hmm. So they start getting together. And then, first ominous sign, Helly appears. We don't see an establishing shot of her by herself or see where she pops up. She's she just suddenly appears up on Irving, basically. Mm. Right out of nowhere. Irving kind of clearly gets spooked. We already know he's suspicious because he caught on to the lie about the night gardener.
And she's on to him. He's on to her. Vice versa, sorry.
Anyways. The gang finally gets together. They meet up with Dylan as well, who's up on the cliff, a little more safe. And they find that TV, the fifth TV we were talking about. The TV, it comes out of nowhere.
They're talking and then boom, TV.
Like literally I saw somebody on a review put like a It comes a wide shot of them, all four looking, and then the TV was not there. And then the next immediate second, the TV was there.
Yeah, some cartoonish, just like Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it's some Looney Tunes. It's unsettling as well, though.
Definitely unsettling as well.
Because this definitely had the opportunity to come up as a funny satire of a corporate retreat going over the top and then trying to excite you with silly things. But there's a menacing underthread to it. It's beautiful, but very menacing. Almost like, oh, hey, you wanted to go outside? Here's the outside.
It is, and it's still very corporate. Like, here, we're team building, but it's our kind of team building with acronyms and weird TVs popping up. Like, there's always this weird semblance of, like, it's not all right that's happening right here.
Yeah, you definitely got the impression that they did not want them to take them to a nice beach to sip on Mai Tais with luau's, and you know what I mean? They wanted something that's like, oh, do I really want to keep going outside? This doesn't seem so nice.
Yeah, cold, stark, like large expanse of just white, like here's where you are.
Beautiful, though. Yeah. And of course, these guys have gumption, so they go ahead. So we find out that the plan here is that they're supposed to have a read through Kier's fourth guide, manual?
Yes.
Fourth manual,
I manual, think manuscript,
called.
Yeah.
Yeah, management guide, whatever you want to call it. Kier's fourth story of his life that's secret and has been kept secret for minis. Obviously, we're not 100% sure how much it's real and how much is them just trying to manipulate the innies.
It always seems like it feels as though we're listening to an unreliable narrator. With all these that we're seeing, it just you kind of get that sense.
It feels like it's on purpose, but some parts of me wonder if we're meant to actually take away, like, you know, there's more realness to this than it might imagine. Mm. Obviously, we'll get to the details in a bit. Some of it seems a little fantastical, but So they go on and embark on this little quest. Basically, it feels like literally like a Lord of the Rings type quest. Where
Lord of the Rings meets Star Wars Planet Hoth a little bit.
Yeah, they're crossing. They're trying to find the MacGuffin, trying to follow the maps.
Yep.
They find the twins of themselves, twins.
Evil doppelgangers that it's like pointing them the way. Yeah.
And we're told that this is on purpose because the story, what to be told is about Kier and his twin brother. Mm. Do you remember his name?
Let me see here.
Anyways, his twin brother.
I can look that up.
So, the innies march ahead through the snow and ice, trying to find out what's what. They come upon the cave where they find Kier's fourth manual, and they start reading through, finding the story.
Yeah, like his evil brother, Dieter.
Dieter Egan. So, as they're reading, they find out basically that Kier had promised to take Dieter out to the woods to frolic and be merry and be free of their dads. Most importantly, not work, not focus on work, and just, you know, basically be free and be happy and not have responsibilities.
Yeah, be free of the
Peter Pan dream, right?
Live forever.
Go out into the wilderness and explore and live out by yourself with no adults, right? So they go out there. Kier promised them they go out there, and they, you know, it's very poetic, old school sounding language, old kind of Victorian English-ish language-ish. But yeah, they kind of go out into the woods, the innies read about it, and then we read a very artistic retelling of basically the fact that at night Dieter Egan jacked off in the woods.
Oh, that whole scene with Mr. Milkshake and his daughter playing the instrument around the fire.
Yes.
Great scene, by the way. Great reading by the actor. That actor again, I must get his name again because he does an incredible
Jeffrey
Tremell, thank you. Yes, incredible job.
He's going to be the next hot actor. He's amazing in this role.
They're apparently looking at him to possibly play Kang, replace Jonathan Majors.
Possibly put him in Mission Impossible.
Love that too. Put him in everything. So, yeah, shouts out to Mr. Tremell.
Amazing actor, and I hope he gets his flowers and he gets his shine going.
Oh, he's
going
to blow up. He'll blow up.
So, very artistic rendition of supposedly Dieter basically jacking off in the woods. It's easy to miss, honestly, from the way it's described, because it sounds like almost a beautiful artistic.
It felt really Old Testament-y a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit of an Old Testament kind of language, religious kind of language. It's Heli who punctures the solemnity of it when she says, oh, okay, so he jacked off. Is that a story about him jacking off?
Kind of says what the audience is definitely thinking, like, what? Did the guy just...
Yeah, no, it's a very descriptive way of talking about him jacking off in the woods. And how Kier was forced to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, just to add another layer of just creepiness.
Just a gruesome scene for a young boy. So, moving forward, Milchek gets upset at Helly's kind of trolling and bullying. And he takes off. Miss Huang is sitting there playing this... What's the instrument called? This little weird... This weird aerial instrument where you play with your fingers.
And it's not... And you don't plug it in either. It's just like you kind of...
Yeah,
it's
a theremin. It's like a theremin, I think.
I was wondering what that thing was.
Right. I think it's... They say the name of it. It's like a theremin or something.
Yes, theremin. You kind of use like air, whatever, airwaves, whatever. Yeah,
something about the waves. It's eerie sounding. It's a pretty cool sound.
When you hear it, you know exactly what the sound is. You've heard it in songs before, in eerie sounding music and whatever.
Right. So, at that point, Milkshake and Miss Huang take off. We have a scene of the four innies. They start, Mark and Helly start kind of flirting, but Irving gets upset and starts calling out, hey, no, she's been lying to us. This Night Gardener stuff is bullshit.
He's on to her.
Starts calling her out, interrogating her. Mark kind of tries to defend her, but Irving says, hey, stop making Google eyes at her. She has to be lying about something.
And I was like, yeah, Irving, yeah, like, let him know.
But even he seemed to be thinking, okay, was Helly lying about... covering it up. At some point in the tent when he was by himself, he said, hey, it's okay, Helly. Just tell me. He did not seem to think that he was talking to somebody else. He still seemed to be under the impression that was Helly.
Okay.
And that, even he hadn't fully caught on. He was suspicious, but he wanted to just find out what happened.
So you're saying Mark is still thinking this is Helly I'm talking to?
Oh, Helly, Mark 100%
thinks
it's Helly.
Yes, yes, I agree.
But even Irving still, I think... mostly thought it was Helly up to this point.
But
he's
been
inside. He was suspicious and knew something was wrong, but he still thought it was Helly.
Gotcha.
So in the middle of the conversation, he goes on, and at some point, Helly gets cold-blooded and says, hey, Irving's just upset because he's never going to talk to Bert again, right? And on some level, it's probably true, but on another level, it's pretty cold-blooded.
Dude, especially, with what we know.
She does immediately try to apologize and feels bad, but she feels like she crossed the line. Irving was being a little bit of a dick too, but the audience knows he's right, so it's hard to be too sympathetic towards Helly, right?
Right.
And then at that point, Irving storms off. He storms off and goes off into the woods to try to find Mr. Milkshake.
His vision quest.
Again, at this point, I was not entirely convinced that he knew it was Helena, or if it was Helly, but I still think mostly you're meant to think it's ambiguous up to this point.
Right.
Then... Two big scenes. One a really big scene. What is shot like a romantic, flirty sex scene between Helly and Marcus.
Yeah, it felt like it was out of like an late 90s romantic comedy, like when the two characters got together.
Romantic drama.
Yeah, when the two characters finally get together.
Yeah. It's like this culmination of their relationship, this beautiful sex scene. And in the meantime, we have a juxtaposed.
Oh, that shot, like her hand. Yeah.
Yeah, we have it juxtaposed with Irving going out into the woods and not finding anybody. His candle, his lantern goes out. We're obviously now scared of him getting hypothermia, getting cold, and getting lost.
And I got to add, the transition shot into Irving in the woods, love her, them making love, and then her hand, at least you see Helly's hand just, caress, and the hand, there's, a dissolve into where Irving is in the woods. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's, it was. It's, again, cinematography and, the editing.
They're always on some next level stuff there, yeah.
But, we see the rest of, this scene, and we freak out about Irving. And then Irving falls asleep just out in the woods and basically has this eerie dream. He sees Bert. He sees the macro data desks.
Yeah.
The numbers are all swirling around, kind of eerie, ghost-like.
Yeah.
Very creepy scene. And then we see a shot of the bride.
Ghoulish,
which is supposedly what Kier met when his brother Dieter drowned, which is the ending of the jacking off scene. that the eater drowned because he turned into moss and fell apart due to his sins, is apparently the telling of it. Although some people on the internet, and I think my theory is too, that Kier essentially freaked out at his brother jacking off and killed him. He just drowned his brother.
Out of just like... Because
they talk about how the waterfall drowned out his cries. You know.
Like so nobody could hear him drowning.
Literally, the waterfall drowned out his cries. I mean, obviously, he didn't turn into moss and into a tree and stuff and fall apart, right? That's dumb. Right, so that, I mean, either Dieter didn't exist, or very possibly killed Dieter for wanting to be free in the woods. Kind of a representation of, you know, Hakir needed to get back to work and trying to kill his freedom, the freedom of being kind of hippie side of him.
Yeah, like he knew he was about this corporate life, but his brother was not, and he had to kill that essentially. Yeah,
and they were young, but he already kind of had that work ethic mentality.
Right.
But yeah, no, it was a pretty eerie scene. And we see this bride, we see this personification, which is we know is one of the woes that Kier one of the tempers that Kier supposedly mastered to become, you know, who he was, right? And we've seen the goat as well, the symbology. We've seen some of this stuff already, so it's clearly meant to be pretty important. And it seems to be very related to what the macro data department is doing, too, when they refine the numbers. It seems like they're refining into each of the different four tempers.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Anyways, then we have the follow-up the next morning where Irving is actually fine. He's alive.
Yeah, just goes to sleep.
Yeah, he apparently...
takes a nap.
I think why some people on the internet are theorizing that they weren't really outside.
It was so obvious with that one. It's like, okay.
But it's strange because, the fact that he just fell asleep outside in the woods at night in, you know, sub-zero weather and just woke up the next day like it was nothing.
Yeah, they kind of just say, okay, whatever, he's up now.
Yeah.
Get over
it. It'd be one thing if, you know, Mr. Milchick had found them and, like, they'd been in an emergency scene or something or, like, a big dramatic scene, but there wasn't. He literally just got up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was strange. So I can see why people are suspicious and the TV and, like, just the whole weirdness of it, right? The unsettling aspects of it. Who knows? It's tricky. It's tricky with the show, know what the show was real and what's not.
Right.
So, at that point, we woke up. Heli's gone as well from the tent. Mark's looking around. There's a telling scene the night before where Heli's getting, you know, romantic with Mark, and she tells him, "I didn't like who I was outside." Very clearly seeming to imply, "Oh, I didn't like being Helena."
Exactly.
Egan. And then Mark says, "It doesn't matter who you are." And we also see the only brief moment of Mark's reintegration when he kind of replaces his wife's head.
Right.
On Heli's head while they're sleeping together. And that's the only sign the whole episode that, you know, to confirm that Mark has been reintegrated. It turns out they didn't just come together at one immediately, right? It's a much more subtle process than it might have seemed at the end of last week, at the end of episode 3. Now we have the big bombshell. Irving comes out while Helena's out exploring. She goes to the waterfall, seeming to feel guilty about something. Again, it's very ambiguous at this point if she feels guilty about, you know, being an Egan and being the responsible one for all this or what exactly is going on. But Irving comes up on her. Irving comes up on her from behind, and he's still obviously clearly suspicious. But then the first thing he says is, "You were cruel last night." Heli was never cruel. And that's kind of the immediate confirmation.
Yeah, they had a little exchange the night before, which I kind of also I wanted to comment on a little bit. He kind of made her, before she left, she kind of gave him these like squinty eyes. Like, it was almost like the other, like Helena came out for a second and then like had to retreat back in because she didn't want to blow her cover. But yeah, she was beginning to suspect that he was on to her again. So I like that whole, like, cat and mouse game almost that's being played between the two.
No, definitely. And again, if you were thinking it was Heli, this episode gave you a lot of reason to believe it was. And that she simply felt bad about who she was on the outside, right?
Yeah.
My theory still at that point actually was that they had kind of gotten to Heli and that they had warned her to basically behave or else... that they had done something.
You think it was an external force that made her change, not something internal that made her.
Right, basically that somebody had come to her and was like, hey, we're going to let you back down there, but if you fuck with us, we know you like Mark S., so we're going to hurt Mark S.
Okay, she's not doing this because she wants to, she's kind of being forced to.
That was my theory.
I got you, okay.
That was my theory.
Okay.
Out of curiosity, was there any point in this episode where you thought it was Helly, or were you sure it was Helena the whole time?
In her exchange with Irving at night in the tent, that's where I was like, okay, I can see maybe that this is her trying to play a little bit on the inside, but it was right there.
Where you were like, you weren't sure which one it was?
Yeah.
They did a good job of being ambiguous.
That's a great tent scene, by the way, between her and John Turturro.
A strong episode in general. Yeah. And so obviously we get the big reveal where Irving catches her. He starts waterboarding her. He starts waterboarding her.
Yeah, man.
It's actually pretty cold-blooded.
You're like, uh-oh, bro, like, chill.
Yeah,
chill.
To basically, not even really waterboarding. He's trying to kill her unless Milchick switches her back on.
Drowning her, yeah.
Immediately convinced he's right. Much like lots of Redditors were convinced. They were right Helena was down there the whole time.
And in a kind of eerie way, like, you know, they're in a watered area. Like the water was concealing her cry inside. Like it was kind of a weird.
Definitely a callback.
Scary.
Definitely a callback. Scary to what callback. Dieter Egan. So yeah, he switches it, and then the final scene of the episode is Mr. Milkshake saying Irving is going to be basically erased from existence. He's obviously going to be fired. He's not going to they're not even going to have a memory of him. They're not going to have a retirement party. He's just going to be gone.
Just entirely gone. Yeah.
Very sad scene. Now, what this episode doesn't quite touch on, and frankly disappointed me a little bit on the internet, a lot of people seem to gloss over this, is that Helena raped Mark. Helena raped any Mark. It was sexual assault, not by some legal, technical definition. No, Mark was thinking he was making love to
his wife?
No, not his wife.
Not his wife, no.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, girlfriend, sorry.
I mean, the person he was falling in love with on the inside, the person he cared about most, person who he had known her entire life, right? The scene was shot like that, too. Like, it was a romantic culmination of their love story.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark did not consent to having sex with Helena, the evil villain who's keeping them locked up and who's using them for work and who treated Heliar as a disposable object to do her bidding.
Yeah, I remember like a few episodes back, he was like, Helena was watching the video, Heli and Mark get close. And I said back on our mini bites, like, hey, she's watching that and she doesn't like that. She wants to experience that. She knows she can't. And now she sees a way to get in. And it's just nefarious.
That's one theory. I saw actually multiple people saying basically along the lines of like, oh, she wants to experience her first signs of human connection and freedom.
Just do human stuff.
Which kind of made sense, but then they, had her rape Mark.
Which is, when she got that freedom, what did she do with it? And that just proves how
honestly, I was going to be disappointed in the show, I'll tell you right now. I was shocked for a while. I was going to be disappointed in the show if the direction they took was that they would to try to humanize Helena, to try to act like, oh, she was just falling in love with Mark, and
I could see that though. I could see
I could see some shows doing that, but they would be bad shows because that was sexual assault, and just because it's a woman doing it to a man does not suddenly make it okay. I even saw some comments along the lines of like, "Ooh, Mark got busy last week." Like, no, man, Mark
is
going to be traumatized.
Yeah, it's assault.
He's already having the confusion about how his outie has a wife that he's supposed to be looking for.
Exactly.
And there's already that love triangle kind of element to it. And now there's this entirely external element
Money's the waters.
Entirely unaware of.
Yeah.
Also, it's a bad look for him, too. Not to victim blame, but suddenly he's like, okay, you couldn't – even when Irving was warning you that something was wrong, you – You couldn't tell that you were talking, dealing with somebody else. You couldn't deal that it was that it was Helena Egan
again,
and not Helly Egan.
He was in love with Helly. He was enamored with Helly. I can again, not to say it's right, but I can see how he would fall into that.
Like, let me put this analogy. Like, let's say you had some evil twin that lived back in Nigeria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, evil twin sounds evil comical, cozy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like just like
evil Nigerian
somebody
prince.
Looks exactly like you, but he's a piece of shit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then you go out on a business trip, and somehow he finds out about it. And so he swoops in. He sounds just like you and stuff. And, you know, he manages to fool Tanya and, like, or, you know, your girlfriend and, like, sleep with her and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to – isn't there some part of you like, oh, my God, what the fuck, babe? But also part of, like, you couldn't tell it wasn't me.
Right. Yeah.
Like, we're not the same person.
It's I kind of almost see it as a scenario where, like, you're on top of the building. It's, hey, shoot my evil twin. No, shoot him. He's the one with the gun. It's almost like that. Like, you can't tell between me and the mustache.
And it's like a mustache. It's like a whole it plays on the themes of identity.
Okay, I see
what's
that.
Real.
But
it's also, again, just this kind of fucked up element on both sides.
Okay.
Right? Like, oh, hey, I got assaulted. But also, you know, the person I was supposed to be in love with now is thinking, oh, wow, you couldn't tell that was the evil bitch who's keeping us all down trapped here.
True. I still think, yes, he couldn't tell, but I think still what she did trumps it all. Like, she didn't have to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that didn't have to happen.
But it adds that extra element because now Helly's hurt.
Yeah.
Because now Helly's hurt.
Yeah.
And so we start episode 5.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Helly in this whole scenario, actually.
Yeah. So we get episode 5, and we're dealing with the immediate aftermath.
The fallout, yep.
First with the board and Mr. Milkshake. They're obviously upset. And obviously with Helena, they're actually telling her. So, and this is honestly where it slowly – I'll get into it in a second. But they basically tell her, hey, we're going to send Helly down there. It's like, but no, she almost killed me, and then this guy Irving almost killed me. They're animals. I hate them. Like you know, she doesn't say I hate them, but like.
But she talks
but
like
she
they're
clearly,
others. Yeah,
she clearly doesn't seem to like them,
yeah.
Right? See, it seemed to dispel the notion that she was down there to, you know, be chums with people and to be buddies. It just seemed like she was down there to be spy for Lumen and to try to get them to work.
Yeah, spy for Lumen, do that, and also just to fulfill her own, like, urges and needs and whatnot. Yeah.
Maybe. Actually, my one theory and my theory that I actually kind of like is that maybe they needed her to sleep with Mark because they want her to get pregnant with this baby.
Well, they're all about, like, extending life and new life in many different ways. Perhaps.
You know what?
Yeah,
it would not be the craziest thing, right? It would not be the craziest thing if it was actually all part of the plan.
Have to be reincarnated
because,
as
like, it seems weird that Mr. Milkshake, one, just let it happen without, like, and that she was trolling him. You know, it was weird in her interactions. I know they're trying to keep it ambiguous, but some of the stuff from episode 4 and the first few episodes is like, but they were all in on it together. It doesn't quite add up.
You're onto something because episode 5, like, the whole response, even with Irving's thing, feels all corporate, like, it feels like, okay, let's just keep up these appearances to make sure our plan is enacted. So, yeah, I think you might be onto something. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And, no, they kind of keep that up. It's very corporate response. They talk. Again, this is where I'm a little almost upset because a lot of the reasoning they tell her for going back down there, they don't make a whole big complicated thing where they have to threaten Helly or do a bunch of stuff. They just say, hey, we tried to send you down there, but you got fooled. They got fooled, so now we just can't do it again.
Yep, that's it.
So, like, a lot of people were along the lines of, "Oh, obviously they can't send Helly down there; she's too dangerous." But they did, and then there's obviously the question of, "Oh, why didn't they send Helly down? Why didn't they send Helena down after she almost got killed? If they could do that the whole time,
unless they want
and
things.
Helena
yeah.
had okay. like several days off. It's not like she was off for several days, so she had time to study the tape and all that."
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why couldn't have Helena gone down there at the time?
Okay.
My reasoning, well, I thought was that, like, you know, Helly's work was too important and that they needed the innies. Even if it wasn't Helly specifically, that they needed the four people representing kind of the four tempers as the innies.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
We'd seen the symbolism of the number four multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that even when they replaced them, they didn't replace them with one or two people. They replaced them with another, like, group of four people.
Another four doppelgangers.
Right?
Yeah.
So
it
seemed to me that part of the, you know, concept was that they had to have four people. That maybe Mark was the most important, but the other ones still had to be doing work too.
Yes.
But now we see, okay, they just got rid of Irving Flat, and they didn't replace him with anybody. They just now have three people. So apparently his work wasn't important. We now know Helly's work wasn't important because Helena couldn't have been doing any work. So apparently the show is telling us that the only person whose work really matters is Mark at this point. And they even call it Cold Harbor, the greatest event in world history. Right, they literally, the guy from the board literally says that it's going to be the greatest event in mankind's history when Cold Harbor is completed. So apparently, yes, Mark Luman at this point is almost entirely focused on Mark as completing his job, which he's 85% of the way done at the end of the episode.
I want to add during the whole like going away funeral for Irving, basically the
let's not jump ahead.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. At this point, you know, Helly goes back down there, and we see Helly for real for the first time and interact with her for the first time this season. And the reaction she gets is very icy.
Right? Well, yeah, of course. Of course
Dylan and Irv, or Dylan and Mark, both look at her suspiciously. They don't really believe it's truly Helly. Now, obviously, they're still suspicious. They just sent Helena Egan back down there. Who wouldn't be, right? You have that. You can never really trust her again, right? You already know that she was able to fool you. So, like, from Mark's perspective, from Dylan's perspective, she was able to fool both of them.
And I like that the show is taking this route of like, all right, Mark isn't just some sap that's going to go along with what's happening. No, he's cognizant of what's going on, and like they know what's happening.
You can see his trauma. Immediately.
Yes.
You can see he's cold. Not only to Irving, but to Helly, but to Dylan.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He just wants to get back to work. He just accepts that Luman is dominant. You see the hurt, the trauma.
It broke him, yeah.
You know, it's a believable, nearly broken, it's a believable trauma response to what happened to him, which again was a sexual assault.
Yeah.
Not some legal kind of maybe if you see it too strict by the definition of the law. No, by any possible definition, that was an assault, a sexual assault.
Done to him by the company he's
done to
working
him
for.
By the corporate people he works for. Yeah. At this point, maybe just for Helena to get her kicks, maybe because she was low-key falling for Mark, or maybe, honestly, because, she was trying to have Mark's baby, and that's all part of the plan. Who knows? I could believe any of those at this point. But we do absolutely deal with that fallout in a realistic way where it's not treated as if Mark had a great time or something. It's treated as if Mark had an assault happen.
Again, I was telling you before, I think the show handled it very well in terms of like realistically and just – and it served the character of Mark well in this. Like again,
absolutely.
Yeah.
We saw the way it fractured their relationship. They no longer have that friendship. They no longer have those good vibes and good work together, right? They've been successfully splintered. We see that there's only three of them now. There's no fourth person coming. They even rearranged the desks.
The desk in a three
to be like, be
formation.
A three-way
star-looking
thing. Helly kind of tries to catch up and go back to the way things are, but Mark is acting shitty towards her, obviously being suspicious. Dylan's being shitty towards her. Mr. Milkshakes makes some excuses about how Helena Egan was just trying to live among the troops like Swedish kings of old.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's the way you put it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was his whole spiel. And then, so very big trauma. And then that's when we get to the funeral scene where they have a fruit version of Irving's
watermelon head.
A watermelon version of Irving's head brought out.
John Turturro's face.
And some cups. Yeah, with John Turturro's face. And they kind of mourn Irving. Dylan gives some touching words.
Yeah, he did. I liked his eulogy,
Mark just wants to get back to work. he's upset. He's clearly very upset. It's a running theme. Helly tries to chase after him and convince him, no, hey, it's me. It's not my fault. It wasn't me that did that.
Sucks, man.
It's not me. But, you know, for him, it's like, hey, I got assaulted. And also, she asked that question from before. You really couldn't tell it wasn't me? You really couldn't tell? And his response is immediately to get upset. It's like, clearly I couldn't.
Yeah.
In a defensive way that suggests, you know, I couldn't do the point that I was seduced into sleeping with the devil, basically.
Yeah, he got played.
Literally the show's version of the devil, right? For the innies. Like, as far as the innies are concerned, that's basically their Satan who's keeping them down in hell. So, we deal with the fallout of all that. And then we deal with the fallout of Mr. Milkshake having a performance review, right?
Oh, yeah.
And this is, again, where the show is such a great corporate satire, does such a great job of taking the corporate world. If you're familiar with performance reviews in the corporate world, this is basically that turned up to a sci-fi 11.
The concentrated version. Even down to saying, hey, man, fill out what you want to eat for lunch.
Yes.
Like, little boy.
Well, there's going to be a six-hour event. It's going to be a whole thing. And it's probably a monthly review. It's not even a quarterly or yearly.
Oh,
it's a monthly.
Goodness.
So some of the things that go like classic corporate bullshit. Oh, he uses too many fancy words and he puts paper clips wrong. In the big journal they gave him, they actually talk about the card he lost in season one.
Oh, yeah, that was – okay, that's what that was.
That led them to discovering that the OTC was a possible thing. That's how they discovered it. So they blamed him. That's part of what they blamed him. If you pause and read closely on the journal.
Okay.
But obviously the main thing they want to talk about is that one – it turns out all the little reforms that was seeing, the hall passes and the Orpo and all these other things, it was actually Milchick's idea, right? And he tries to take part of it. He tries to say he's not Harmony Cobell. He's not trying to, you know, lash them out like slaves. He's trying to treat them like people. Me and Kosi actually have a theory going on that there's more to him that meets the eye and that he's not going to end up being a final villain.
Yeah, it could be one of those sleeper agents. We'll see. We'll see. I hope I'm correct on that. But
he could be working for the CIA,
FBI,
private company. He also tries to have another moment of racial recognition with Natalie before going into the performance.
Their scenes are – I forgot the actress's name, but their scenes are always fantastic in the last
both
episodes.
Of them are amazing actors. The way they act with their eyes, such subtle movements.
Her eyes in particular are just gorgeous. Yeah.
It's subtle facial movements that give away their entire inner thoughts.
It's like two people that know that they're part of the cog. They hate that they're part, that they're cogs in the system, but they just gotta do it because they gotta. And she in particular wears that on her face when talking to him. It's just great. It's great.
No, absolutely. Top notch acting.
Yeah.
Top notch, you know, again, just a corporate satire, living it as a black man in a corporate, trying to rise through the corporate structure as a black man.
Yeah.
The difficulties that come with that. Where even if they promote you and give you special permissions and stuff, there's always different standards. There's always certain awkwardness.
There's always something else you got to deal with.
Pandering.
Microaggressions. Yeah.
Just it's never quite. You never quite feel at home in part of the big boys club,
right?
But yeah, so at that point, we're going back down. Another interesting scene is we see Dylan discover that Irving has left him a clue
inside the
directions, the directions to where the training floor, the elevator to the training floor.
Very, very detailed directions.
Which actually, I forgot to mention the opening teaser was showing somebody coming to the O&D team, picking up some dental equipment, it looked like, and taking that to the training floor.
Yeah.
We never see the guy's face.
Yes, he's shot from afar, obscured face.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they revealed the actor's name, but obviously he immediately goes to the training floor and goes out the elevator.
Remember that in the beginning, then we never see him again.
A little teaser to let you know that that's happening.
Okay.
Right, just to let you know it exists. To back up when we saw her... Right. Talking to Irving about how that was happening. Somebody was taking it to the – she called it the exports hall.
Exports. Yeah.
So Irving's last words were hang in there, which were the painting on – were the words on a poster in the break room. Where Dylan was holding on to the two –
it's a recreation switches. Of the, the recreation of it.
The recreation of the – him holding on to those two switches when they did the OTC in season one.
It reminds me of those – remember that hang in there cat?
Yes.
It reminds me of that. I don't know if that was a straight up like callback to that.
It might have been. But then so Dylan figures out, okay, hang in there. And then he reaches behind, finds the little, basically the directions. So now the Indians have the directions to the training hall. Very complex directions, but now they can find it.
Yeah.
Right? So obviously big setup for what's going to happen on the back half of
left,
season.
Left, right, left.
Yeah, a bunch of left, rights.
PlayStation 2 code.
Yeah, basically. And then another big scene we see, we kind of finish mostly with the Indies at this point, other than we see, Audie Irving deal with the fallout of being fired, goes to a phone booth, talks to somebody, apparently he was trying to get his innie to do something, he was trying to get seems to be spying on Lumen, trying to be find out what they're doing. We don't really know at this point, but he seems to suspect they fired him. He doesn't really know the full details, obviously, but he seems to suspect he was fired because they caught on to his innie doing something. Mm-hmm. We don't know what. And then, finally, Bert, Audi Bert, goes up and talks to him. He's been following him. Mm-hmm. Turns out, obviously, Bert caught Irving yelling, knocking at the door at the end of season one, yelling,
Bert, Bert. See you.
Apparently, Bert's husband got kind of jealous because, you know, some guy showing up in the middle of the night.
Yelling your name
in a way that clearly sounds like they need you and like they're important.
Like, I don't like the sound of it.
Yeah, apparently ruined the vacation with his husband.
Oh, that's what ruined it?
Yeah. Apparently his husband said no to the vacation because...
Of course.
Thin ice. He's on thin ice, sleeping on the couch. But he actually invites him for dinner to get to know each other.
And Bert, again, played by the incredible Christopher Walken, I gotta say.
And you gotta give him Christopher Walken because he plays Innie Bert and Audi Bert so differently.
Yeah, man.
Same with John Turturro. They're completely different personalities. Yeah. They do such a... I mean, they're tremendous actors. But the way they play two totally different people who inhabit the same body. It's the acting we see in this series is totally top-notch.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
It would definitely hurt the series if we didn't have that acting.
Yes. And it would be very clear, like, because you need to believe these are two distinct people, because they are. They are distinct, but, like, you have to make us believe that.
They have to sell you that they are two totally different people.
Yeah.
They're not just the same people with just, missing some memories, just a cute little science gimmick. No, they're different human beings.
Right.
In every meaning of the word.
Right.
They're mirrored images of each other, but still different. So, they get to know each other. We're going to get to basically find out what happens with, see what, if there's any suspicion, see what Irving's up to most likely. Especially now that Irving's not down on the server floor, we're not going to likely see any Irving too much more, I feel like. Unless he gets reintegrated, maybe.
That's the only way. But
there's a way he could come back. We'll see.
But he's effectively like dead, quote unquote, in terms of like
the OTC technically still exists.
Yeah.
Although maybe they removed the ability for that to happen when they fired him. I'm not sure.
Oh, like he lost his privileges, OTC privileges, basically.
Well, they just took off the switch that would allow that to happen.
Right. Same thing. Yeah.
Maybe. We're not sure. there's a good chance we see more of Innie Irv at some point, but it did feel a little bit of a death scene at this point. We see how Vornum and everything.
Definitely felt like it, yeah.
And then, kind of the final shot of the season is Mark, he gets this 85% on the Cold Harbor file. We see more of the glitches with the reintegration glitches.
Yeah.
Not too much, just kind of disappearing picture.
Subtle ones, a little bit.
Like some pills, I think, that he's taking to stay healthy. Rugabi's actually staying at Mark's house, doing treatment, kind of following through. And then, he starts to go outside, and that's when Milkshake comes in, and now it's more asshole Milkshake. You know, he's kind of done with the niceness now that he got told off. he got told off by several people, basically. Hey, stop treating them like people. Start treating them like the objects they are, cogs
in the machine that they are. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Both Miss Huang, the little girl Miss Huang, and the boss say, like, "Hey, you're being too nice. Your kindness reforms are bullshit. Messages, get him in line."
Mm.
So the final scene of the season is Mr. Milkshake confronting Mark right before he leaves. A few minutes early, trying to cheat the system a little bit. 5 minutes early. Well, we've all been there, right? Trying to leave work a few minutes early.
It's 4:55.
Yeah, 4:55. It's about that time. So, Milkshake comes in, gets very close, up close and personal to Mark. And, basically starts threatening him and very importantly tells him, "Oh, did you tell Helly you fucked her Audi?" In very graphic terms. Again, reminding us that as much as Mark got assaulted, in some ways, Helly... would have to live with the knowledge that the person she cared for and loved slept with her body while she was unconscious.
Right, it wasn't really her.
And wasn't able to tell that it was an entirely evil bitch version of her.
Yeah, many layers of just messed up with that one.
Yeah, so it's fucked up on all kinds of layers, and clearly it's heavy on Mark's mind. Now, he goes back out. We see that Mark has Rugabi in his place. They've been staying together because he's helping with the reintegration. And final scene of this of the episode, and it's a big scene, is Mark has sees something that reminds him of Gemma, his wife. And suddenly we see, kind of like Petey in season one, we see one of these like blackouts where it goes into a different place. And so we know, suddenly see that Mark is down on the severed floor. Like he thinks he sees himself down on the severed floor. And we hear Miss Casey's voice, obviously his wife's voice, saying the nice kind of meme-like things from season one. Your Audi is a kind person. Likes talking to birds.
It's those assurances again.
Vague assurances. Mm-hmm. You know, I already like stargazing.
Yeah, you're right.
And
he's
a kind and he's an awesome person. You know, just like vague thing. But it's a very kind of moody, more kind of searching. He could tell it's his wife's voice. You hear him.
It's real heady.
Echoes of these like wellness sessions.
Yeah, super heady.
Miss Casey's had. And then last scene is he turns around, sees his wife. Like cuts back.
She's there.
And tell, like, she's only been saying these things. Cuts back to real life. Tears are streaming down his face. And we know he now has the confirmation for sure. Yeah. You know, he's seen his wife. She knows his innie has seen his wife. He knows his wife is alive. It's been a theory. Rugabe told him that it's what's happened. But now he knows. He saw it for himself.
Such a powerful scene, man.
Incredible. Again,
such a powerful scene.
Just like episode three. Absolute amazing cinematography, shot design, set design, the way they set everything up, where you know he's hearing his affirmations and you know it's Miss Casey, you know what's about to happen. The emotional impact, obviously, of everything that's going on. Now, this is Mark, not Marquez.
This is Mark,
Mark having his emotional crisis of truly knowing his wife has been alive this whole time. Just breathtaking character work, man. Breathtaking analysis of the themes of identity, of corporate, you know, dominion over people. This fucking corporation went so far as to rape one of their employees to get him to work more efficiently.
Yeah, man. So where do you see this going now? Like, he knows Gemma's there. It's like, what now? Like, it's like,
obviously,
I think he's gonna burn the whole place down now.
The reintegration is gonna keep going.
Of course.
At this point, I don't think that Mark S. Any Mark knows he's being reintegrated.
That's also the other thing too. That Any Mark is still in the dark about
so
that.
So he has more trauma coming still, and I think some of that trauma is gonna bounce back. I think they're mutual traumas.
You're
going to cross the streams.
Exactly. And that's
going to cross the streams.
And when they cross, that'll be the inside incident to make him be like, all right, I got to either.
We've already seen Mark coughing. We've already seen a couple of times Mark coughing, kind of like Petey did.
Mm.
We've already seen Rugabe admitting that it's not quite an exact science. Him drinking some weird egg-like. You know what I think he drank from the juice?
Like, yeah, it was milk. I believe it was milk.
I don't know. It had some weird.
It had curds in it.
It had something in there. It looked like egg drop soup.
Yeah, describe it as. Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like egg drop soup. Like he was just drinking raw egg drop soup. I don't know, man. It looked weird.
It's unpleasant.
Yeah, very unpleasant. Probably seems to be part of his medication for the treatment.
It's just the reintegration process. Yeah.
It seems to be. Well, Mark points out, and we've established that. Reintegration does not seem to be an exact established science that she's done a bunch of times successfully.
Yeah.
Her one previous story ended in death, and I think that hangs over the... Deep down, we know they're not going to kill Marquez, but there's a good chance we're going to see some health issues, some drama, some suspense.
They're definitely setting it up with that. So yeah, I'm curious about that. Moving forward, I'm curious about that part going in next season.
So obviously the biggest storylines that have to be answered... One, what exactly is Cold Harbor?
Yeah.
We know it's related to Gemma.
It's at 81%, not 85%.
At the end, it got to 85%.
85%. Yes, sorry. Yes,
85%. When his mind glitched is when it got to 85%.
Yes.
Making, obviously, I don't know if it's connected. It's hard to tell.
I think it
obviously,
is.
Obviously, some things, again, with the Heli and Helena thing, there's just some weird things that happened there. One... It seemed like they could have sent Heli down the whole time. And the argument for doing it now was literally that, oh, we can't risk Mark finding out again. Oh. But then they risked finding out in the first place.
He still ended up finding out, yeah.
Yeah, and if they could have forced – they were able to force Helena down – or Heli back down there – or Helena to send Heli back down there after Heli almost killed her. And they're able to send her back now again after she almost died a second time.
Yeah.
You know, so why didn't they send her in the first place? That's – It seemed, I kind of want to criticize the choice because it seemed like that was more mostly done as a to set up an ambiguous twist than it was done to as something that made sense within the characters and like what was going on in the rest of the story.
You think it wasn't serving the story, you think?
I think it would have been better if they had just cleared it up to the audience and played with the dramatic irony within the show so that we had clearly established. We might be wondering exactly what she's up to, but, you know, we wouldn't be wondering if it was actually Helly, right?
Right.
Like, there's a way of looking at the show. The first few episodes was like, oh, yeah, I'm watching the Helly and Mark, you know, rekindle their romance and kind of follow up on the kiss of season one. I'm watching their exploration of what's going on and the follow-up, and I'm watching Helly, you know, be suspicious, you know, because she's an Egan or something else is going on. Mm. But, no, actually, no, I'm watching Helena down there, and I'm still not 100% sure what her goal was. I'm not sure if she slept with Mark because she got the hots for him and decided to have fun, or if she slept with Mark because it was part of a grandmaster plan, or because she thought it would help him get to work.
I think she slept with him because she had the hots, but now she's realizing, oh, I have to enact this grand plan. Having the hots for him probably wasn't
it did not
part
seem like
of
she was
the plan for that.
Sad that she wasn't going to get to go down and see Mark.
Oh,
again.
Of course not. Yeah,
it seemed more that she was upset that Helly had to go back down.
Yeah, it was kind of an inconvenience to her almost.
Yeah, no, it did not. Again, she did not seem like she had warm feelings for him. Mm-mm. I don't know. It's just weird, like. A schoolgirl crush for someone who's 40 years old to act. Maybe she's led a somewhat sheltered life.
I think that's also why, too.
We don't have confirmation that she's led that sheltered life. I think she was sent down there to fully spy, get Mark to work. I think that was the entire purpose, seemingly, of what happened. And then they sent her down there because, you know, she convinced them that she was going to be able to trick Mark. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if she got carried away or if she meant to rape Mark. I feel like I like it better if the villain did villainous things on purpose.
Yeah, I think they're
rather
going
than,
more.
Oh, the villain did villainous things because she was falling for him. Like, that's, I guess you could see the message of how she's so closed off and twisted from humanity that she thought that was somehow romantic. But again, I feel like I would like it better if that was just part of her master plan.
Yes, somehow. Same here. I think it was part of her master plan, and Mark was
root against Helena because, again, I don't think she's done anything so far that is worthy of rooting for her. The only thing is maybe that her dad was somewhat cruel to her and that the board is kind of forcing her to do stuff. But I don't know. I don't feel like that's not enough to make her have sympathy considering how fucked up she's been otherwise. Like her own actions have been fucked up. Even if she hadn't slept with Mark, she had just kissed him and then been like, Mark, I have to tell you something. And then, I don't know, Milchick had busted in the tent or something, you know, and then they had revealed it later the same way. Then suddenly it's like, it doesn't seem as villainous. It's like, it's like you kind of get why Helena wants to get away from who she hates on the outside. And a phrase about how she didn't like who she was on the outside suddenly makes more sense. But now it just seems like she was trying to manipulate Mark. I don't know. It's tricky.
Yeah, it kind of seems as though she was like trying to, in this whole evil master plan that she enacted, Mark was just an unfortunate casualty in it. And I think moving forward, she's like, she's going to keep her eye on Mark, but it's not like in some kind of romantic way. Because that's the romantic way. The romanticism is for Helly and Mark, not Helena and Mark.
I think even that is snapped too, because I don't see how Helly and Mark come back from this. Especially when we're already reintegrating Mark. We're already beginning the process of it, and now he's to find his wife. It just seems like the kind of thing where, I don't know. I don't see how you come back from that. It was too traumatizing. I don't know how Mark ever is going to fully trust Helly again.
No, it was an important moment in their relationship, and it's gonna show the fracture that's gonna be important moving forward in the next season.
The fact that, you know, Lumen seems to have successfully fractured the camaraderie they had together, and they're all now splintered and doing their own thing, and that Mark seems to be working just out of some sense of rage and impotence and just not knowing what else to do. It seems like the plan worked.
Yeah, it makes him Mark the perfect worker for them to do their bidding now. Like, he's now, they've broken him down. They've taken all of the stuff away from him. Now he can focus and be laser focused. And we're going to see a different Mark, I think, going into the next season now because of what's happened.
I think
he's going to set up a different kind of guy.
We're going to see the reintegration start kicking into speed.
Oh, yeah.
To where Mark S is going to start realizing he's getting reintegrated. I'm still curious what's going on with the MDR. It seems clear now that that it's not entirely important what they're doing, all of them. But whatever Mark is obviously important. But I still have the theory that maybe what we're seeing on the screen, the numbers we're seeing on the screen, isn't really what's on the screen. Or, I mean, at this point, I would honestly be, like, the same way the Orpo, seemed like it was fake.
Yeah, that construct, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a construct. Hey, what if the whole thing is a construct?
I think so. I think there are a lot of things, like, that allude to that fact, that, like, this is what Lumen is doing. This is all a big testing facility for them to, you know, figure out what works, figure out, like, Kira's whole... like whole message, trying to see it through. So yeah,
is that his wife was down there, and we know it was his wife, and she didn't notice anything. She obviously didn't like see totally different things, and she physically interacted with Dylan. So I don't know. See, it's
it still could be. Yeah, like her, the wife definitely, but I still think it's still Kieran trying to make sure that like whatever this dastardly plan gets enacted, and doesn't matter who.
Haven't seen Luma's grand plan,
of course,
or Cold Harbor, the whole thing,
yeah.
It seems like at some point we're going to have some kind of meeting with Kier.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're trying to bring Kier back. My personal pet theory, and I don't know if the recent episodes have supported this or not, is that they're trying to recreate the conditions by which Kier was forged.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're not just trying to like clone him. They're trying to be like, okay, Kier was this hard worker who met his wife, you know, working, and who did all these great things. So he conquered the four tempers. He did all this stuff. So they want to create somebody who can overcome the same challenges to be kind of like recreate the prophet.
Yeah, like give him the same circumstances because, you know, you said it your best. Just cloning him will be hard, but we could create an environment that'll give us that, and it's working.
Like they're trying to mentally... recreate the mind of Kier. Maybe he's doing it to Mark. Who knows?
Who knows?
You know, maybe they got someone in the training room they're doing it to. Maybe it's even Gemma. There's still a lot of mysteries. I don't want to guess too much because obviously I was very wrong about my last guess.
It's good to speculate, and you know when we speculate, it's cool. But then by the time the episode starts, let's just watch it and see, and then the speculation begins again for the next one. So it's cool to be wrong on a show like this because you know what they have written out and what they have played out has been really really enjoyable so far. So this has been great. You put me onto this show and I've had a blast watching it. So this has been great.
I wavered a little bit after episode 4, but they dealt with it so well in episode 5 that I'll still clearly say it's the best show on television going right now. It's just wonderful. It's just wonderful the way it does it. It's wonderful the way it uses the acting performances, the set designs, the
great cast, yep.
To keep you hooked, to show you just wonderful scenes, top-notch scene work. Just the whole show is excellently made. Right?
Yeah.
There really aren't too many flaws I can think of at this time.
Yeah. No one.
So, very highly recommended. By the time this episode releases, I think episode 4 will already have come on at night.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can get it out by Friday most people will read this review before they watch it at night.
Look for this episode to drop on Friday. But, thanks.
Well, we got to do the plug of the week, Kosi.
We're doing the plug of the week. Oh, man.
Plug of the week, brother. I guess I'll go ahead and get it kicked off.
Okay.
So, my plug of the week, briefly mentioned it last week, but now that it's on Max, I want to plug the movie Flow.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely,
yeah, man.
Beautiful, stunning movie. No words. An animated movie about a kitten in a kind of post-apocalyptic world, and the voyage he takes as the world kind of floods everything, right? As the flooding takes over everything. Gets on a boat with some cute animal friends. Absolutely stunning movie. I won't spoil much other than to say that there's no horrifying tear-jerking dirt deaths, but it'll still stress you out. It'll still get you sentimental about the animals. Adorably made, beautifully shot, just stunning, stunning artwork. The way they tell a story without using any words, based on the emotions of the animals, based on their expressions, the way they capture especially the cat so perfectly. It acts exactly like a cat. Very much recommend if you have a cat, you hug him, watch the movie, all in love. Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, man. I'm looking this up. This is, like, I think it's nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Picture.
I hope it wins. It's become, I didn't put it on our 2024 review because I hadn't watched it yet, but it's become one of my favorite movies of last year.
Oh, man. No, like, I remember you talking about this last week and how much you loved and enjoyed it. Yeah, I definitely want to check this out. Is it on a streaming platform at all?
Max.
Okay, perfect. Dude, yeah, I remember you talking about this. Definitely going to check this one out.
What about you, Cozy?
All right, so my plug of the week is I'm gonna go take a little bit back now. You know, I always go through my Vudu, my Fandango list of just online movies, and there was one movie that came to mind this week. It was a Jonah Hill 2018 movie called Mid-90s. Ever heard of it?
Mid-90s?
Yeah, called Mid-90s.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. So Jonah Hill, this was actually the first movie he ever directed. It stars Sonny Soljak. He voices Loki in the new God of War game, like little boy.
Okay.
So like he was the motion capture kid for it. So it stars him. It's a period piece about just some kids skateboarding kids in the 1993 California, and just about him just living life. And I picked that one because I like the fact that, like, Jonah Hill, you know, he's known for being in Superbad, you know, This Is the End, all that's a 21 Jump Street, but this was like 2018 where he decided to, like, I want to direct and I want to just put just like this flair and this this kind of like take on movie making out there. And it wasn't really, didn't really do well in the box office. A lot of people just didn't really go see it, but I liked it a lot. And yeah, it's called Mid-90s, just a coming of age movie about like a kid who skateboards, and yeah, it turns 7 years old this year, and I kind of feel old just thinking about that. But yeah, I watched it a couple days ago and just saying, like, wow, this is like Jonah Hill's first movie. Yeah, it's currently not on any streaming platforms. I think you can see it, maybe I think it's Hulu's the only one I've seen it on. But yeah, if you just get a chance, yeah, Mid-90s is the Jonah Hill movie.
Good recommendation.
Thank you. That's my plug of the week.
All right, Cozy. Fun episode.
Yeah, man, dude. All right, now we can actually fist bump, because, dude, I want to thank you now for tuning in to have this conversation about Severance, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And again, you can find us on every streaming platform. We are currently working on getting on Apple Podcasts, but of course you can find us on Spotify, you can find us on YouTube, you can also find us on Blue Sky, you can find us on Instagram, you know, talk to us on Reddit, you know, we'll be on there from time to time. But yeah, I've been Cozy, and I've been joined always by Wannabe. And until next time, guys, adios.
Adios.